And we are live. All right. Well, hello, Mark. How are you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
Well, doing great, thanks. It's been a few months since we've had you on, but I just saw you a couple 3 months ago at the Cosmic Summit.
Yep.
You've
Yeah,
been
the
busy
summit was
since
great.
then.
It was good to meet you finally and hang out and all that.
Yeah, it was awesome seeing you in person. A lot of people there. Hello to everyone in the chat. Yeah, so the Cosmic Summit was pretty awesome, but you've been doing a lot of stuff since then with the Comet Research Group. You guys have been pretty busy, was that correct?
Well, yeah, I mean, most of the work of that was done more than a year ago. We've been trying to get it published for, well, especially the Baffin Bay paper. I think they got rejected two or three times before we got it in plus one. So, and the work that was done on that was just fucking exhaustive. Like, there's so much scientific analysis that went into that paper.
Tell us some about it.
I mean, I wasn't particularly involved in much of it. But so they found the evidence for the Younger Dryas boundary in the first ocean core. And so for decades now, they've been going around drilling cores in the ocean. And they're all stored at some repository, various repositories around the world. And if you want to do scientific analysis on it, you can write to them and say, hey, I want to look at this section of the core. Can you send me some? And yeah, they picked through it and found the Younger Dryas boundary evidence, the impact proxies. And it's actually the first paper where they characterize the cometary dust as well. So we were joined by a Russian scientist, Vladimir Selmovich, and he's an expert on cometary dust. He's been finding it in peat bogs and stuff in various places. And yeah, so his work led us to inviting him to join us on the paper because we were finding the same stuff in the ocean core. So cosmic dust and microspherules. That was platinum in that paper too, I think.
So you basically, we had a scientist that was finding stuff that corroborates what you guys had already been finding. So you just kind of pulled him into the fold. All right, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's I guess having somebody else, verify they're seeing the same stuff is not a bad thing, right?
Yeah, well, it depends. If you ask that, that Paul Barford guy on Twitter.
I do.
Yeah, so he saw that we had a Russian on the paper, and he screenshotted it, and he's like, "How could anyone work with a Russian in this climate and all this stuff? Who cares about the Ukrainians? Not these guys and all this stuff." He was raging about it just because we collaborated with a fucking Russian scientist, man. Like, imagine being such a fucking retard that you blame someone for the actions of their government. Like,
There's a lot of that happens. It's the world's pretty polarized anymore, which is frustrating. Frustrating as hell. It's I've been talking about a little bit lately that the political polarization of science is if we don't do something to stop that, in a not too distant future, we're gonna have you're gonna have situations where you've got a scientist that's on one team and a scientist that's on the other team, and then a judge that doesn't know dick about the field having to rule on it, and that's just gonna suck. It's just gonna we're gonna end up with not being able to trust the stuff that we eat again. It's going to be like fucking it was before we had a USDA and all that shit.
yeah.
Good to see everyone in the chat. Sorry that I'm not able to talk and type very well at the same time. If I was a secretary, I could do that, but I wasn't. I was an electrician. I'm drinking with my other hand. Sorry.
What do you got
But
there, cider?
yeah, cider. The
Nice.
Washingtonian drink. Yeah, that for those of you that are in the other parts of the country but the states, you're probably doing okay. But here in the states, it's late. Yeah, I know. It's time for drinking.
It's 2 a.m. there. You got an excuse?
Oh yeah, it's 1 a.m. I mean,
Okay.
they don't close the pubs here for another hour. We don't call them pubs, though. So if you do, they look
The
at you like you're a weirdo.
bar.
The bar. And there's a difference between the bar and the club. And that's, I think, why we don't call them pubs, because it sounds too close. The UK is a mess. Yeah, I've seen that, that the UK has been a hot mess for shit ever since the politics got stupid back in the early days of Trump being talked about. But anyway, that was one of your papers. You guys, you've had three of them come out. Is that correct? You were saying?
Yeah, so the second one was in the same journal. So essentially, we found shocked quartz and a couple of other proxies in a few more sites around the place. So I think it was 2021 or 2023. So, well, actually, no. So in the Bunch et al. Paper for the Tal el-Hammam airburst, we were finding these shocked quartz grains, but they're slightly different to traditional shocked quartz. Because they're formed at lower pressures, right?
Okay.
And there's been dozens of laboratory experiments, and that these grains have been found at confirmed impact sites like Meteor Crater in Arizona, and also in sediments from nuclear bomb testing as well. Okay. So in a cratering impact, stuff hits the ground at supersonic speeds, and that shocks it, right? Any quartz grains that are on the ground are mechanically altered by the shock. But when an airburst happens, it projects its energy to the ground. And so it still hits the ground, but at lower pressures. And actually, the detonation itself sends out chunks as well that hit the ground. So they affect much lower areas, much smaller areas, I mean, in terms of the actual pure shock of hitting the ground. So, yeah, I mean, this stuff is pretty well accepted as forming under these low pressure shock events. And I mean, this is another reason why the YDIH has so much of an uphill battle. Because we're literally pushing the envelope of what's found in impact events. Like, the history of the impact discipline is 5-6 decades. It's a very young scientific field.
Yeah.
And up until now, it's almost exclusively focused on cratering impact events, so big holes in the ground. But airbursts are like hundreds of times more common than actual grounding impacts. And so there's very little known about airburst proxies.
Yeah, and it stands to reason they wouldn't shock the quartz nearly as much as an actual impact.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's pretty
Similar things can be formed in tectonism, in tectonic activity. The grains warp and crack and all that. But they're distinct in that they don't have basically glassy quartz in them, like a silica glass in the cracks, and that can only happen during a high temperature event like an airburst. And so that's what we see. All the cracks in these grains, they have silica glass in them, and that's a textbook impact indicator. And actually, the leader of that study, Ted Bunch, he was a former NASA section chief, and he did his PhD. He was one of the first people to characterize shocked quartz from Meteor Crater in Arizona. So he's one of the top people in the world on shocked quartz. And all these people like Boslow are saying, oh, well, he wouldn't know what shocked quartz is all. And like, the guy can look at something and tell you if it's been affected by an impact. He was geocosmic chemist or something like that. He's an expert in impact minerals, basically.
Well, at any rate, he was basically the guy that came up with the idea of shocked quartz. So, I mean, it stands to reason that he would know what it is. Of course, Boslow's saying, Boslow's still in these arguments. He's got me blocked on every format, so. And I don't
well, he, literally a couple of days ago, he published a new article in Skeptical Inquirer, basically trashing the YDIH and saying all these nasty things again. So, yeah.
Well, it's like his life's work at this point will all be remembered
He
for.
literally has devoted his life to bringing us down, basically. So.
Which is kind of insane, to be honest with you. I mean, that's, I could understand being opposed to some things in this world and like dying on certain hills, but a meteor didn't hit the Earth 12,000 years ago. Seems like a pretty crappy hill to die on.
Yeah.
We got a question
Yep.
here, Mark. Any entry, any anything interesting to note about Woodley impact structure in WA? Is Washington? What's he talking about?
Could be Western Australia.
Oh, okay.
No, I've actually never heard of that.
Neither have
I
I.
assume it's rather an old crater. If it was quite young, I might have heard of it, but yeah, I'm open to hearing about it. If you have any info, Trig.
Yeah, I've never heard of that one before. But so that's pretty interesting, though. I wasn't aware that the same guy that basically discovered the idea of shocked quartz was pushing the envelope on it again. That's the kind of thing that I think I needs a lot of light shown on it, to be honest. That's a kind of a big deal.
Yeah. And he passed away a couple of years after we published that. So, yeah.
Damn, that's too
So,
bad.
definitely a great mind lost.
Yeah, that is too bad. But yeah, and there was one more paper you said that you guys
Yeah,
looked up.
that's that one that I talked about in my first appearance with you, the study that claimed the geochemistry at Hall's Cave was volcanic, and they deleted the most important data point from their manuscript. The one that contained the Young Dryas boundary in order to claim that their sample was the Young Dryas boundary. Yeah. So that one finally came out in a journal. So I'd previously published it on Graham Hancock's website, but obviously you can't really cite grahamhancock.com in a scientific paper, so
I was going to say that's like a one strike against you when you try to get it published in a journal, even.
yeah.
Benjamin Fairhall here says, willpower money. Keep up the good work, Dan. Thanks for your work too, Mark. Ignore the knockers and keep walking tall. Thank you, Benjamin. I appreciate that. And I'm sure Mark does too. That's pretty cool of you. Yeah, it is frustrating that so many people seem just hell-bent on throwing rocks at it. I mean, I can understand, I can understand like people getting all hell-bent on racism. I can understand people getting all hell-bent on certain ideologies, even if I look at it and I'm just like, I don't see why people care that much. But this is so, if the entire world woke up tomorrow and was like, oh, you know what? Aliens built the pyramids. There's only going to be a handful of people in the tourism department that's going to change their fucking day at all. The rest of us are going to go just about life. And the same thing with an impact. It's not, this isn't going to change most people's daily lives. It's
Yeah.
going to ch change how many people visit Dry Falls here in Washington. That's about it. Hey lads, Mark, has there been much effort into looking for impact proxies in Australia, Australasia area in general?
Impact proxies concerned from the Young Dryas boundary? No, there hasn't been. I've been pretty slack on that point. I probably should have been. Well, actually, originally, I wanted to do my honours thesis looking for the platinum anomaly in a lake core from here, but the section that I needed wasn't there. And interestingly, the Younger Dryas across Australia has traditionally been minimised, like the impact of it. But I think there's something wrong there because when you look at all these different sedimentary records, like lake cores and all this stuff, at the Younger Dryas boundary, there's a big hiatus, which means the sediment stopped accumulating there. And to me, that in itself is indicative of like extreme change, right? So, but because the sedimentation slowed down drastically, then the preservation of anything that was deposited then isn't very good. So, I mean, you should be able to see it somewhere, but it hasn't been looked for, at least at the Young Adrath boundary.
Right on. Well, thank you, 757. He's a longtime supporter of the channel and hooked me up. He was at the Cosmic Summit too. He hooked me up. I don't want to spoil who he is in real life because he's got an anonymous account, but I know who he is in the real world. Thanks, bro. But yeah, that's the Woodley impact structure is said to be the oldest recognized impact, yes, in Western Australia.
Is that the recent one that's like more than a billion years old that was found out there?
Jesus, a billion years old. How many times?
I saw another question from earlier. Lots of glass and a huge strain field, Darwin glass. I haven't heard of Darwin glass. I know about the Australasian tektite field. I haven't heard of Darwin glass.
Neither have I. Oh, well, scientists in the future will think of the vulcanized Eris and the Maralinga nuclear test site in South Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, Maralinga was the main nuclear testing site. Even today, you can't really go in there. You need really special permissions and all that. So, yeah, I mean, it's like any other nuclear testing range. There's one in New Mexico. There's a couple around the place. There would be a lot of impact glass there. Well, nuclear glass or trinitite, as they call it. It would be nice to go there. But, yeah, it's still pretty locked down even today.
Yeah, probably glow in the dark for a little while after going there.
Yeah.
You watched that miniseries on Chernobyl? Oh, my God. That was horrible.
Yeah, I haven't watched that one. It's on the list.
Yeah, I watched it not too terribly long ago, and it was, I mean, we all knew it sucked, and we know how, if you know anything about World War II, you know how the Soviet Union dealt with problems. You just throw more people at it, throw more people at it, throw more people at it. But it was pretty brutal how, when they tried, there was a number of times they tried to find ways to get around using live bodies. But in the 80s, man, you don't, sorry, bud, we ain't got many robots.
Yeah, I saw an article the other day that apparently the concrete shield on Chernobyl's been cracked by fighting. So,
wow. Well, that's not bad.
Could be rearing its ugly head again at some point.
Time for the kids in Germany to start playing inside again. Yeah, the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis is one that is pretty interesting. When you look at the floodwaters, I mean, since I'm up here, that's a pretty natural thing for me to be kind of hyper fixated on is the whole channeled scab lands. It's, you know, I can get in my car right now and be there and back before I have to take my kid to school. And channeled scab lands is impressive and amazing. And the papers that they have written on it, even today, they're not done by any stretch of the imagination. They don't have, like, this is how it went down. They have a hypothesis that Randall Carlson, in my opinion, it's the number one thing he's ever spoken about, is talking about the tensile strength of ice and how the ice dam at Glacial Lake Missoula just would not be able to hold up to the kind of water they're talking about. And so, I mean, but they, even if with the people that accept that Glacial Lake Missoula existed, still they're positing water had to seep down from the glaciers above or something, like under water under the glaciers or something to account for all that's there.
Yeah.
757 asks a possible question for Mark outside of YDH and science. What do you find the most intriguing in life in general?
That's a tough one.
To kill your enemies, to see them
in life
or
about life? That's the question, I guess. Most intriguing in life. It's not outside the YDIH and science. It's definitely well rooted in that. the YDIH is the most intriguing thing to me at least. And I mean, plenty of other questions too about prehistory, where we came from, how we got here. That's one reason I really like that Michael Button guy. His content's really thorough, actually, and thought inspiring and well produced, actually, as well. Yeah. So.
Yeah, he's fun to watch.
I saw Flint tweeting about how he's basically just like slop and mastered the algorithm or whatever to get so famous so quickly. But it's just jealous, really, because yeah, he got on Rogan so soon.
Yeah, Flint's just angry.
Yeah,
no, it's pretty nice watching Jill this last year kind of do the rounds. Bring a lot of people in the community out and just give them a day on the stage and let them talk.
Yeah. Yeah, Ben's episode with him recently was really fucking good.
I agree.
Good that he finally got a solo episode and he went deep into all of the most important things. So.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It's pretty amazing seeing how many people are, like I said, in the last year have been on there. It's pretty wild the impact that has. Austin's changed from in just a few years from being like the place that if you played blues or country, well, you knew about Austin and you might go there for like business or, you know, your job or whatever. But and until Joe went there, now it's like the hub for comedy and the hub for all kinds of people in the alternate history community and right wing stuff and all kinds of goofy shit. There's all kinds of people that hang out down in Austin now.
Yeah, it's really transformed the culture there, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. Rubate, if you got serious about investigating the YDH in Australia, would it be open or would you hit a wall putting the new political Aboriginal history in peril?
No, there'd be no issue there. The YDH is much younger than the oldest Aboriginal dates, so there's no real you know, treading on any toes there by investigating it.
That makes sense. Just be a little feather in their cap. We survived that as well and didn't even have to leave. Yeah. The rest of the world got fucked with. We stayed here. Where's the leather jacket? I don't have to wear the leather jacket this time of year, man. It's only September. Which, give it a couple more months. It'll come out. It gets cold down here. The squid. No impact happened yet. If I'm not mistaken, much of the eastern half of North America is evidence of being peppered with fallout from the impact.
Yeah, I mean, from an impact. Yeah, he's talking about the Carolina Bays, obviously. I'm not a Younger Dryas Carolina Bays guy. They were definitely formed by an impact, but not the Younger Dryas, I don't think.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Well, thanks for hanging out, and thanks for the super chat. Ed Fu, text you later. Take it easy. Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank you, Matt, for watching. I had to hang out late because Mark lives in Australia, and this is what I do for a job. So I just got a kid to get to school, and he's 17, so getting him to school is a whole lot easier than it was younger. Wake him up and then fuck off until it's time to take him. It's like, leave me alone, Dad. I got this.
Master Chief has a question. No,
go ahead.
So, Master Chief, are there any old Aboriginal stories that could tie into the YDH? Yes, I know of at least one. The Adnyamutna people, I believe is how you pronounce it. They're in to the north in my state, and they have a story about the Pleiades. They call them the Seven Sisters, and basically, in a nutshell, the Seven Sisters went out. They were eaten by a giant snake, and the snake was killed, and there was a massive flood, and because the snake was dead, it blew up from the gases and exploded and sent the Seven Sisters up into the sky. And that's, they became the Pleiades then. So we've got the snake iconography, we've got the flood iconography, and we've got the Pleiades. So, yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's well, many
The
things for you for a meteor stream.
Pleiades being the shoulder of the bull of the Taurid meteor stream, so.
Yep, that's what I was just getting at. It's part of the part of Taurus, part of the Taurid meteor stream. So if you didn't weren't looking, depending on what asterisms your people looked at, if they weren't looking at they weren't looking at a bull, if they were looking at the Pleiades instead. Stories of the Ant People is interesting. I'm not sure. I've never heard of that.
He'd be talking about the Hopi tradition of the ant people.
Oh, okay.
Have you heard that one?
That's the one where they live underground and to hide from.
The cataclysm. Yeah,
Yeah,
the
so
ant
I.
people bring them into their subterranean shelters to protect them from the end of the world, basically. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I just was. I wasn't on the tip of my tongue, but yes, I've heard of that. But I couldn't remember the cataclysm exactly how it went down. If it was fire, if it was water, if it was
I
snow.
can't remember which one it was,
It's
but
almost
one of
always
them.
one of those three. Wind every now and again, but usually it's fire, water, or snow. What gives stars its name? I'm not sure what star we would be asking about, but depends on the
Usually
star.
named by whoever discovers it.
Yeah.
And they have an international naming convention. Like you can be shortlisted to be have a star or an asteroid named after you at some point if you're
Spend some
in,
money.
well, yeah, money and if you're influential in the field and all that, so.
Yeah, that's we can buy a star nowadays, right? It's all just like you buy a plot of land and be a noble person in fucking Scotland or whatever. That turned out to be a scam, but
Yeah, it is interesting, Master Chief. It's always seven, even though there's 9 or 10 stars in the Pleiades, but you can only really see seven of them with the naked eye, so that'd be why. But yeah, it is interesting, and it ties into the whole seven sages thing too. Obviously, there's a different idea of that they were the survivors of the cataclysm that came, but it could also be related to the Pleiades in some way as well.
I am drinking an Angry Orchard, not coffee. Sorry, guys. I have to get up in a few hours, at least for an hour or two. So yeah, I'm not drinking too much coffee at this hour. But no, the Pleiades is one of the ones that's interesting because it's funny to me that they needed this kind of evidence to go there. But when they lost a star years ago, and it's recorded in certain legends around the world, and they're like, oh, that proves that. That proves that people were looking at the stars way back then. It's like, man, they've been looking at stars for millions of years, millions and millions of years. They've been using those things for a very long time. It's, you
And
know, it,
the Australian Aboriginals noticed that too. There's a guy called Dwayne Hamacker, or Hammer, yeah, Hamacker, I guess. He's a academic in Australia. He's really into legends to do with cosmic impact events, like oral histories, all that stuff. He's done a lot of work with his mentors over the years, collecting these astronomical stories. And yeah, they noticed they lost a star there too, and a couple of other ones too that we've recorded.
it's pretty interesting. Thoughts on Three Eye Atlas, not spaceship junk, but more on debris streams and interstellar origins. Maybe they should name it Swift Taylor and a Wagon Digger. Then, right. Other than Rogan would be glued. Personally, I think Three Eye Atlas is really interesting. I think that I re would really like to see them intercept it with that probe that's over by Jupiter when it comes back around. Because I think that personally, odds are it's not an alien anything. Odds are it's just got different chemistry and stuff because it was formed somewhere else in the universe. But that's where putting a probe on there we could probably learn a lot of shit, like a lot, really fast by landing a probe on that thing. If not, well, it is flying behind the sun at the same time as that other weird thing. So if they come about lasers ablazing, boys, I don't know what to tell you. We're all fucked then. But There's not much. I don't have much advice for you in that point. So there's your spaceship side of it too. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. 757.
The other thing you mentioned there is that the other interstellar object.
Yes, I forget the
name one that was found after this one.
Yeah. I just found it much more recently. And the fact that they'll both be behind the sun at the same time is got a lot of people, you know, strategically, that would be a good place to do whatever.
Well, the fact that there's two of them here at once is weird enough. But the fact that they're making a close pass on the other side of the sun is another level of weird. Like, I've tried to keep up with the Throya Atlas stuff. It's kind of up in the air because everyone's looking at it with every telescope in the fucking world, and they're all publishing all these different things. There was one team who said, "Oh, it's actually expelling liquid water. It's not like gaseous water." And that's unheard of for a comet.
Well, liquid water in space. How the fuck do you pull that off?
Yeah. And so, some weirder algorithm filter they used on their data or whatever. And so there was people saying, "Oh, well, that's a misinterpretation," and all this stuff. And then I hear that it's fucking outgassing nickel now. And it's like, what the fuck is that? Like, that's fucking unheard of. that's not a normal comet.
No, definitely not normal. Space keeps getting bigger. He says it's not as catchy as things keep getting older. That's definitely true. No, when it comes to chemistry, it's something that, like, it's one of the places I'll point out to people that try to imply that science has so many of the answers. It's like, we don't know shit about chemistry when you get off outside of the environment that we live in. When you start talking different pressures, different temperatures, and on a macro scale, like where they've got fucking seas of molten magnesium or whatever, the liquid, all kinds of goofy shit flowing on Neptune and Saturn. I forget all this stuff, but it's... Mm. You get to where just you're in the own solar system. There's laws that we just, like, there's the laws of chemistry as we know it break down under certain circumstances, and we can't test in these environments in any meaningful sense. And so when you start talking about another solar system that formed in another way, so an object from that, the chemistry in that's liable to be all kinds of goofy. And that's clearly what we're seeing, unless it is an artificial object, in which case, well, yeah, like one guy said, we'll be swimming in a sea of brass as we welcome the alien overlords. a sea of spent brass.
Yes, it's definitely interesting times we live in. All this disclosure stuff going on, and the bloody alien mummies, and this fucking spaceship looking thing that's heading straight for us.
NASA announcing there's life on Mars.
Yes. Yeah, the same day that Kirk was unalived. So,
no.
Way to bury the headline, guys.
But yeah, that was definitely a way to bury the headline.
Yeah. And I mean, that's really interesting stuff too. Chandra Wickramasinghe's in the Cosmic Tusk orbit, and he's the father of panspermia, basically, with Fred Hoyle. And I'm absolutely certain there's a few papers he's published over the years. I mean, some of the footage they send back from the NASA probe, the Mars rovers, it looks like brecciated limestone, like with fossiliferous limestone, like there was a sea there with organisms living, like it was on Earth millions of years ago.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. I mean, it's in the habitable zone, and it clearly has gone through something horribly catastrophic, and the surface looks, I mean, we keep, the more we look, the more we find that it was a more viable place before, a lot more liquid water in the past. I mean, honestly, given what we know about life on Earth, I would be surprised if we didn't eventually find some life tucked away in some little corner around the fucking poles on Mars where water still falls and forms and shit. I mean, we got shit on Earth that, once it formed, man, it took off, and those little snails that they don't even got mouths. They just fucking sit over the top of volcanic vents and grow iron fucking shells. I mean, come
Yeah,
on,
those things are fucking metal.
man. Yeah, you get to that point where you got those kinds of demon creatures being formed on our planet. You can only imagine what's happening in other places. But yeah, so anyway,
We're learning new stuff about our own crust every fucking year. Like they've extended the biosphere many tens of kilometers under the ground. Like there's bacteria living down there, like that deep in the crust.
Yeah, and they so
And
there you go.
to try and pretend that there's nothing on Mars is just ridiculous.
So yeah, with that, and that's not crazy. And then, so it does get more outlandish when you start saying there might have been civilizations on Mars or something. But it's still, I mean, it still isn't in the realm of like insanity. These are the things that honestly piss me off when they get treated just like the same kind of silly bullshit as somebody claiming that they can psychically contact the Pleiadians or some bullshit, right? That stuff to me, and they just all lump it all together and call it woo, flat Earth or bullshit. So, man, come on, the idea that there could have been a race of beings on Mars, 100 million years ago that was fucking doing all kinds of intelligent shit isn't outlandish. We haven't looked there enough to have any idea. So to just assume, I mean, let's put it this way. If we're going, anybody who thinks about life on in the universe would assume most likely that there's life out there. It's just too fucking big. Now we know there's life in this solar system. We know there's things on this planet that can survive and be viable after being blasted through zero gravity and no atmosphere and freezing temperatures. Why is it so crazy to think that there could have been life on Mars at some point? Doesn't that make more sense? I mean, isn't that more possible than life on some other place? I mean, we got life one planet away, right? It's fucking one asteroid hit away from launching some little fucking water bear over there.
Exactly. And trig points question, if you click your fingers and answer a mystery, what would it be? Probably got to be the lost civilization, right? Like you got to know who built Sacsayhuaman, who built the Hunan Pacha, and the other one above it. Was that a global civilization? Is it just a coincidence? That's probably the answer I would see if I could click my fingers.
Nickel without iron, Luke B points out. Yeah, that's one of the things we see in the comet is the quote unquote comet.
But even if
Imagine.
it was iron, right? Why would it be expelling it? Like you would think that would be in its core among the non-volatiles.
Yeah, it is definitely, it's weird. It's hard to figure out how it is hard to figure out what's going on with that. Again, when it passes Jupiter, I forget the name of the probe, but they've got a probe that they're talking about retiring, and they were gonna
Yeah, it's
just,
Juno.
yes, thank you. They were gonna fly it into the atmosphere like they all usually do when they retire and just get what they can before it gets crushed. But yeah. Now this thing's moving goddamn fast. Now about what is it, like 15 years ago, that dude landed a probe on a comet. I don't know if you remember that, but he landed a probe on a comet about 15 years ago, and that was hard. It was moving fast, but they weren't moving nearly. I mean, it was like 10% of the speed, or like 5% of the speed, I think, of this. It was just really fast.
And that's one of the things I've heard with the Juno discussion. It's at the end of its life. It's in a opportune position, but I don't think it's got the fuel to do it. So they would need to find some way to slingshot it around something to even have a hope of getting it fast enough. So.
That sucks, man. That sucks. And yeah, you can't even necessarily predict where it's going to go, because every time it jets off some more gas that of fucking some random chemical we don't expect, Is it possible that it's geologically active? Fucking absolutely, I would say. In my opinion, I mean, again, the chemistry in this thing, like, we would have to basically kind of throw out most of the rules that we know for how things get formed, because if we assume that it's natural right off the bat, it's got a bunch of nickel with no iron, it's fucking gassing at weird times, it's shooting out light at weird times, it's the fucking coma was pointed the wrong direction for, I think it still is. I mean, it's weird in a number of ways. And so I mean, like I was saying a minute ago, you got way different chemistries in different places, and you go to a different solar system where things formed entirely differently, potentially. And yeah, you're gonna have things that chemically aren't even close to the same. The nickel on there could be in some weird state. I mean, I don't know enough about chemistry to even speculate too hard, but I do know that in different states, chemicals do shit that you would never expect them to do. So this one has been a pretty interesting one. It's fun living in a time when we finally got enough tech that we can see things from outside our solar system. You know, this certainly is not the third thing that's come through even since the beginning of the space age, but we now have the ability to see this shit. And for the longest time, it just zipped right on by.
And Matt Summer, I'm not sure if metals from asteroids are the same isotopic makeup as Earth's metals. Correct. They're often very different. That's one of the things in the Slon et al. Paper. So the ratio of 187 and 188 osmium is different for mantle sources and well, radiogenic and unradiogenic sources. So, yeah. The ratio of the metal is one of the ways they can tell it's from space, because that ratio doesn't happen on Earth. So,
Yeah, they check iron for like the iron plate in the Great Pyramid, for example. They checked that for to see if it was meteoric iron, and that was basically when they abandoned it as a hoax, when they determined it wasn't meteoric. That was just like, oh well, it's obviously bullshit. I love skeptics' minds. Oh well, thanks, Stink. What about gold? What about it, man? It would be cool if there was some in that comet. We'll see if it starts gassing out gold. If it does, maybe then we'll send some probes for it. If it was oil, we'd already be there. So before 13,000 years, any info on how large Antarctica's mass size was? The lost Arctic pole is always spoken on.
Well, before 13,000 years, that's the end of the Ice Age, so it would have been much bigger in terms of the ice sheet, but I don't know whether he's talking about continental crust, because that would be it. You would think it would be smaller because all that ice is pressing down on it. So.
Yeah, that's true. The Antarctica is interesting in the regards that there's always some of its coast that's ice-free, and they have these Antarctic oases that just kind of go around I mean, hypothetically, if somebody wanted to map that, they could do it with low tech even, and if they were to like do it over many hundreds of years and just keep going to where that those areas are. It's kind of funny. They have like some pretty big ice collapses that were happening even before global warming was, you know, an argument or a thing or whatever. I don't want to get too started on that, or I'll get the whole fucking chat all arguing and banging about shit. And then get the video demonetized and have a little thing. I probably already did. Just saying that I'm probably going to get a little world notice. Mountains were shorter back then. You know, I've been trying that argument the other way around, saying that my mountain was shorter back then. Nobody listens. It's definitely outgassing strangeness, and the light curve is weird. Yeah, the Three Eye Atlas is definitely a weird one. It's not. Oumuamua was kind of weird, though. The little bitch middle child, I can't think of its name, but nobody pays any attention to that one, because it was just a fucking comet. That's why this one's 3i instead of 2i. The second interstellar object was just, it was a regular comet in every way except for its speed. But
Is that the Oumuamua one?
no, the Oumuamua was the first one, and that was like a big stick of rock that was kind of tumbling through, and it was
Was that
weird.
the first one they found?
That was the first one. There's a middle one that nobody remembers. 2i Borealov, thank you. Yeah, nobody remembers because it's just a regular comet. It's just kind of the middle child of the bunch. It's funny that it's in the middle because it's kind of like that. Nobody pays attention to it. But it again, it was not very interesting. We'd already had a interstellar object come through, and this was just a regular comet, where a Muamua was at least a kind of a stick asteroid tumbling. And so it was, what the fuck's this?
I think they retroactively went back and found like one from 2014 that had hit, and they hadn't seen it before it hit, but
No, wow.
the speed that it hit, I'm pretty sure they're confident that's the interstellar object.
Oh,
And
damn. Well,
that's the one that Avi Loeb went out with the boats around Indonesia and scoured the ocean floor to get those spherules. Well, he thought it was a UFO, basically. So, well, that's just Avi's shtick, right? If it's interstellar, it must be a UFO. So,
always.
yeah. So, I don't know if that's included in the naming convention, like the one eye and two eye stuff, but I'm pretty sure that would technically be the first,
Oh,
even though it's retroactively.
yeah, I would definitely Avi Loeb, Luke Sane.
Yeah.
The what's the one that was people have been asking me to look into, and I've been looking into it a little bit. The Bogosphere, you seen that thing?
I mean,
I've been looking into it, and basically what it comes down to is the same thing with a lot of that stuff, is if you want to believe the one or two people that are talking about it, that have their hands on it and stuff, it that's cool. But by and large, it seems like there's just it doesn't have enough. I get very skeptical. I'll just start with this. I get very skeptical in the third world because our money goes a long way there. So it dragging somebody in over it, where to us making something that would be some technological fake device that looked like that might not be worth more, you know, it'd be like $10,000, $20,000 before I put in that kind of effort, right? But to somebody in the third world, $500 might be enough to do that, man. And so it gets where it gets really difficult. I have a hard time with the same thing. I have the same problem with the tridactyl mummies. It's like, damn it, why is all this stuff happening in Peru and Colombia and fucking the parts of the world where everybody's so poor that just it frustrates you because you can't trust the information then, and you can't go put your hands on it. And you give it to one or two scientists, not to everybody's scientists. So that's a problem.
Yeah, and I mean, I saw the paperwork for the supposed radiocarbon date they did on it too,
Yeah.
and that, I mean, that alone would be enough for me to say that the whole thing's bullshit. Like, the paperwork says that the dates for a 4 Foraminifera, which isn't the bogosphere, so
Oh.
it's like they've taken this other document for like the sample release form from this lab and like photoshopped bogosphere in there.
Oh, fuck me. Okay.
And
All right.
so and the company's name has like a massive spelling mistake. It's like an I instead of an A, and I can't remember exactly what the word was, technology or something. But like it's dodgy as fuck. Like, and I mean, if I haven't dove too much into the bogosphere, I've seen things here and there about it, but seeing that paperwork is enough to turn me off of it. I hear a lot of stuff about Stephen Greer being a like a f faker, and he's the main one pushing it too. So he's very controversial person in the UFO community. A lot of people say, "Oh, he's the real deal," and others say he's a complete fraud, but I guess that's how it is in any field, really. So,
You can't trust poor people, Dan Richards. Yeah, you can quote me on that. You can't trust poor people in any situation where they're apt to make a dollar, because if you ain't been poor, dude, hey, fuck you don't even know, right? If you're broke, it's like train your dog, make your dog love you, and starve it for 3 days, and then leave it alone in a room with your hamburger and see how long it takes to eat your fucking food off of your plate. When you start depriving a being that's like organism that uses chemicals to survive, you start depriving that being of those fucking chemicals, and it starts finding ways to get those chemicals. And that's, you know, that's for, goes the same for food and for the crackhead on the street corner that'll break into your car. Same thing. You can't trust people that don't have enough resources. I'm sorry. Just like you can't trust an animal that doesn't have enough resources to get by. I don't have to fucking tell you. That's not unreal. And you can quote me on that twice. Bring all the hammers and sickles into my comments. I don't give a fuck.
Definitely a controversial take.
Oh, fuck. I'm not saying you can't trust them on anything, but when money gets involved, it's,
adage is everyone has their price, right? So,
and that's exactly it. You see it in the collectible community. When I was a kid, you could buy Action Comics number one for about 10 grand. Now it cracks a million. And the reason is because when the people sell it, the person that buys it, generally speaking, it just aggregates. And the person that buys it, it takes more money to change that dude's life. So it takes $5 to change somebody's life. And just like the ads I used to say on TV, for 30 cents a day, you can feed this child. Well, the fuck, you can't feed no kid here for 30 cents a day. And so, yeah. I mean, so when you go over there, they'll beg $10 from you because you'll hand them $10 because it don't mean shit. But to them, it's a month of food. It means a lot. So, yeah, you, in that regard, everybody tells you, you get off the plane in Egypt and they're fucking hounding you for everything that you've got. And that's, I mean, watch Terminator. What happens at the very end when she gets the picture? She buys it from a little kid that takes a picture of her because she's down in Mexico and he's poor. $4, $5, and she haggles him down to $4 or $3 or whatever. This isn't a new thing. It's just, I'm taking the spicy boy take on it and just saying it bluntly in one sentence, Twitter style. Yeah, you can't trust poor people, but go ahead and edit that out of context.
Yeah, and I mean, in Mongolia, it's a very poor country, and I was tipping very well wherever I went, and the look of gratitude on their faces and all that was a sight to behold. It was really good. So, just by tipping not much money to you, you can change someone's life.
Yeah, and that's just
in those countries. Yeah.
And so on the flip side of that, when they first started, like when Napoleon got Egyptian shit, like all fucking was all the rage. And that lasted, I mean, it's still going now, but it lasted 100 years solid of just it being fucking crazy popular, 150 years even. Well, the Egyptian people didn't take them long at all to start counterfeiting things. We still dig them out every now and again. A lot of stuff when I was in my 20s and was interested in this stuff, a lot of those things have been proven forgeries with better technology down the road. They would make a scarab and feed it to a goat to age it, right? To artificially age the thing, but they would still have to make a scarab. I mean, those are pretty finely fucking made little pieces of jewelry. Yeah. And, but they'd go through the trouble to make it and just to sell it because same kind of thing. It's like, it wouldn't be worth it if the people were paying $50 to people that made $50 three times a day. But if they're, you know, it takes you fucking a week to make $50, man, getting $50 for a couple of days work is pretty sweet.
Yeah. For sure.
I'll give Dibble another moment to complain about. Go on, guys. Yeah, I'm sure. I don't even watch his stuff anymore. Like, I'm kind of just past Flint. Every now and again, I'll see him make a quote or a post that I just laugh at and just like, oh my god. But like, he made some fucking post that something about how when Charlie Kirk got on Alive, something about how it was because of the writing on one of the rounds was like, if you read this, you're gay. So he said it was gaming culture and he was joking. He's like, I'm not serious. I'm just saying you can't blame it on any one group because of that and blah, blah, blah. It's just like, man, oh God, what a shitty take.
Yeah. To Flint's credit, at least that tweet, I was looking for that tweet about Michael Button earlier about being slop and mastering the algorithm and all that stuff. And to his credit, he looks like he's deleted it.
So that's good.
He's got a much more tame tweet about Michael Button now.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. He is, he's a hateful little man. Luke says, and that is honestly true. Like he's deleted a lot of videos and stuff that he's had live chats because he would, get angry and start yelling and stuff. And you know, I tell you, you know, for somebody who's been fucking with people on the internet for like 100 years, you know, I've been imagining 15-year-old me in 1990 on the bulletin board service was imagining the guy that I was fucking with getting red in the face and screaming when he read it. But like seeing it in videos, that's just so, it's so satisfying. It's not quite as cool as getting to meet Graham Hancock was, but it was definitely like another moment of satisfying to my inner child.
Yeah, I was the same in the early 2000s on the bulletin boards and the forums and trolling and being a nuisance. That's my background, so that's probably one of the reasons that I get in and scuffle a bit with Boslow here and there. So
yeah, things were a little bit different back in those days. Right in the 90s, I remember in the late 80s it started, and by 92, 93, if you were on bulletin boards at all, you had fucking phone cards going through your feed. You were using them, and just nobody was paying for the long distance at that point, man, because you're spending fucking $200 a day in long distance if you were actually paying Ma Bell what they wanted for that shit.
I think I got banned from my RuneScape forum like 20 different times on different
shit. We in the old days, like you know, like all these different systems that could barely talk to each other. And so guys would write all this complicated software to get it to work. So you'd have an Apple II and a TRS-80 and an IBM PC, and they're all in the same room, and they would all talk shit. Like the Apple guys didn't have a way to minimize their characters. Everything was caps. So everybody would call them blockheads. And the TRS-80s, you guys would all call them trash 80s. And the IBM PC, everybody would just call them blue fags. That was the name for them back then. But yeah, it was funny when you watch. There's a bulletin board, a BBS documentary that's been on YouTube forever. It's like 7 parts, and fuck, I probably watched that thing 10 times. It's so nostalgic for me. Got my first modem in 95. Yeah, that was, I got my first, my dad had it, but I was using it in, I want to say 86, 87, right in there.
Yep.
Apple II.
Raised by 4chan for a couple of years.
Oh, man. Oh, man. 4chan, goddamn. Yeah, that was raised by 4chan. That's, man. You're a young'un. No offense. Wow. That's so funny. It's like I just feel ancient hearing that, because that's like 4chan. Damn, that was like, yeah, that was, that's like modern internet. That's like social media era. That's like the beginning of memes and shit. That's,
yeah. I was early teens when 4chan was a big thing. So
Amigas were awesome, and Amigas were like the gaming machines of the fucking late 80s. Those were so, those and the Atari ST computers, fuck, man. Whew. Well, an Amstrad, you're a limey. We didn't have no Amstrads over here. I got stuck with a, there's that TV show, The Young Ones, the British TV show. I fucking love that show. And there was a game for it for the Commodore on a cassette, and I ordered it from England, and the guy, the box was Commodore, but the tape was Amstrad, and so I could never play it. But yeah, that back in those days, it's funny. Like the architecture for computers was so vastly different through so many different systems that it's wild how it ended up. It ended up so, you know, you've got two companies basically that dictate how computers are getting made. Commodore 64. Yeah, I still got a Commodore 64. And a TI-99-4A, I think, somewhere. But, yeah, 64 is the most popular computer of all time. It sold like 6 million units. You're fucking never going to beat that.
Yeah, the earliest computer I ever used had Windows 95, I reckon.
I've got one of those over here for a game machine. I haven't used it for like 5 years, but it's, or maybe 3 years. But if I ever, anytime I want to play, what's that fucking game? I'm going to play this. I only play the second one. People are going to laugh at me for not remembering. You're fighting against the computer, and they recently redid it. Oh, God damn it. I'm going to go nuts trying to remember it. Somebody help me out. You're fighting against like this big computer. You're inside of this, it's a first person shooter, considered one of the first immersive games. System Shock 2. I play it. Play that. That one's a fucking amazing game. I play that one. Oh yeah, Doom. I remember that. Doom and Wolfenstein 3D and Quake. We used to play the fuck out of those. Shadow Realm. Yep. Shadow Realm was fun. I had an Abacus. Yeah. Yeah. And yes, yeah, System Shock. The first System Shock was meh. The second one was so fucking good. But yeah, if a lot of those 95 games, if you get them on the hard copy, playing it on a modern computer is all but impossible. You've got all these goofy patches, and but just having
well, these days for the games in that area, there's websites that have every single one you can play in the website.
So,
yeah.
A lot of them are like, yeah, a lot of them are that way, but I always use Max for everything, so that's I was trying to use my son's gaming PC when I first got System Shock 2, and I just ended up buying Windows 95 PC. Anyone have Action Max from the 80s? Oh, yeah. That was those packaged games of multiples, if I remember right. Good Lord, and everybody's talking about everybody. You grew up the era of losing power to the hard drive for too long would brick the memory. Oh, dude, I grew up in an era where I bought a Winchester hard drive not too long, about 10 years ago, but it's an old Winchester hard drive, and those are the ones that spin. And when I opened it up, it has each sector that's inspected by hand, and two of the sectors were written as dead. So two sectors of the hard drive were dead, and they shipped it out. They're like, yeah, fucking, you know, it's pretty good, man. 98% compatible with your system. Anyway, yeah, we are way off topic here. Sorry, I'm not trying to make you talk about vintage tech. Just
no, all good. I missed a question that Trig Point posted a couple times.
Yeah,
heading from Melbourne inland to Wolf Creek and a few other places. Unfortunately, I don't really have any recommendations. The only thing I would say about that is watch yourself on those outback roads because very dangerous. One of the leading experts in impact science, basically, back then, Eugene Shoemaker, he was doing a tour of the craters out in the outback, and they rolled their car and he died. So another great mind taken too early. Our story might be different if he'd survived, because he was kind of on board with Klub and Napier and the Torrids and the coherent catastrophism model and all that stuff, and he was like a very big name. So if he didn't die, the paradigm might be different today. So yeah.
Damn, that sucks. Yeah, it's brutal. One of the things that's, I think, important to think about when we look back in time and we ask ourselves how the ancients did this or that, how influential one person can be in a society in general. I mean,
yeah.
You get I kept forget that guy's name. The mathematicians will be yelling at me. The Greek guy that fucking figured out all of the triangles and all that bullshit.
And, Pythagoras.
Yes, and he's without him, they wouldn't have been chucking rocks at boats in the fucking with any accuracy, but he was doing a good job with that shit. And you get the same kind of thing like in the modern day with Einstein, where it's like without his insight, I mean, his insight that, you know, is so counterintuitive that it's not something that most people are ever going to think of. So if you don't, you know, how many billions of years are you going to wait for another one? So anytime we think about all kinds of goofy shit, it's like, there's so many things that are probably part of the way the universe works that it's going to take one mutant McNugget of a human to fucking see behind the veil to find that one out. And they might well be working in a field somewhere.
Yeah, very true. And that's one of Elon Musk's arguments, right?
Yep.
Against the depopulation agenda is that the more people there are, the more super geniuses there are that can help get humanity out of the hole that it's in. So, I had something else I was going to say, but I forgot.
Sorry.
No, all good. So, yeah, exactly. The squid. Pythagoras wasn't even the first person to come up with that. just the first one for Western society. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, ancient people, indigenous people, they'll, maybe not all of them, but certainly they figured out Pythagorean theorem. All of the, like, I mean, Archimedes with his bathtub water displacement thing, like, doesn't take a fucking genius to work that out, to be honest. Like,
no, it doesn't, but it's one of the things I point out a lot to people, because, you know, if, like, do you know much about baseball?
No.
Well, this is, I think, you'll get this metaphor very well. If you're a left-handed player, you've only got a limited number of positions you can play. You can pitch, you can play in the outfield, you can play first base, but you can't play third base, you can't play shortstop, you probably ain't going to play second. And the reason for that is where your catching hand is, right? And it takes me explaining it for 5 seconds, and you're like, okay, yeah, duh, that makes sense. But if you don't think about baseball and you walk in and look at it without having somebody explain that to you, it might be 100 years of you looking at that game before you ever figure that out, if you're not actually watching the game get played, if you're just trying to,
yeah,
like we do with the Mayan ball games, right? The Aztec ball game, we're trying to figure out what they did with it. I guarantee you that the children in those villages had way more better grasp of the strategy of that game than our best fucking scientists do today. You know, that's a no-brainer.
And I mean, it's like any sport, right? If you look at track and field from the 60s to the 50s, it's fucking dog shit compared to today. The high jump, the pole vault, all that stuff. All the next generation of people, they stand on the shoulder of giants. All these people work these things out that revolutionized the sport. I mean, basketball, for example, there was no dunking back then. If you can't dunk today, you don't play basketball. So,
that's exactly it. It's, and so those kind of that goes for everything. I mean, that goes for, when you look at all of the things that happened in World War II, as far as like just the basic ideology between the Americans and the Germans on technology. Like, the Germans are like, we're going to, and a lot of this was because they were kind of forced to, they didn't have the material and the manpower to just crank shit out like we did. But like, you know, any one Sherman tank was no match for any one German tank. There was, like, the tanks the Americans were field, they called them Rossignols because that's a lighter. If you shot it, it exploded in a flame. It was a joke by comparison. But there's an old story about a German Luftwaffe officer that was captured near the end of the war, and he was being interrogated by an American officer, and every day the American would walk him from one place to the other, and they would pass by the landing strip, and there was a busted up P-51 Mustang one day, and the Germans pointing at it and laughing and saying, how, what do you think of that? What do you think of that? And a few days later, the officer calls him to his office and points out the window, and there's 5 brand new P-51 Mustangs there. And he says, what do you think of that? And he said, that's why you win this war. Yeah. And that, you know, hey, thank you very much, saggy old one.
And the Allies were terrified at the rate that the Germans were advancing with their technologies. Like, it seemed like it came out of fucking nowhere, basically. They were the only people with rocketry. They were the only people, well, they were some of the earliest ones to characterize and discover and begin to work with the electromagnetic spectrum. The first night vision was developed by the Germans. They had night vision scopes.
First assault rifle.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely revolutionized war, and that's why some people speculate about the rural society and all that. They were contacting these life forms, and they were giving them this off-world technology and all this stuff. And yeah, I don't get too deep into that stuff, but I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I don't get too deep.
The sources in Antarctica and fucking, what are they up to?
Yeah, I don't get too deep into the conspiracy side of what is generally considered, you know, the conspiracy side of the World War II stuff. But the just that basic, that's that basic clash of mentalities. That is it going to be are we going to mass produce our way through this? Or are we going to make, is it going to be more that's better? Or is it going to be better that's better? And that kind of, we end up with these kinds of, I guess, like zeitgeist mentality wars so often that, you know, it's honestly like I've talked about this before. It could well be one of the reasons that we see this huge technological dip in Egypt when the pyramids start just turning to shit. Is, I mean, it could be nothing more than just a fucking cultural shift. That would be weird that it would happen so heavily like that. But my point is that it really just takes, it doesn't take a whole lot. It takes an idea. It takes one person. It takes a zeitgeist to form. And next thing you know, we all are Charlie Kirk. Fuck. Right. I mean, it's, you know, one man and here we are.
Hey, yeah. I mean, if you look at our own society, 1100s, 1200s, 1300s, 1400s, building all these cathedrals, little like that today. It costs billions and billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so there's probably an aspect of that with Egypt, too. Like you say, the culture change, they move away from building that way. For maybe they're progressive. They eliminate slavery and all this stuff. So,
yeah. It's tough to say, but it's definitely it's very difficult for us to look back into the past and make any sort of predictions or any sort of accurate guesses about things. Like the one I always use for this is World War II. We have so many guys that we have so many things. We don't even know where certain people wore their unit patch at certain times and shit. We don't know what, all kinds of stuff. And this was written down and archived, but we don't have it. It just got lost. It got burnt. Something happened over the last 80 years and it vanished. Yeah. And during the beginning of the serious information age, man. People recorded, you did not join the army in those days without having your name written down and shit. So it's, when it's like that, and then you look at the Civil War and how little we know about it, and then you look at, you know, fucking something like Thermopylae or something, and you're just like, fucking, this could be complete bullshit. We don't fucking know anything at this point. I mean, it's so hard to suss things. It really gets very difficult to see what's going on in the past. So when we get these timelines, to me, like, for example, like the Assyrian Kings List or the Egyptian timeline, where it gets back into this guy reigned for 8,000 years. To me, it's not much different than when the Bible says Methuselah lived for 900 years. It's like, all right, no, I'm sorry, guys, but no. Hey, Tammy, you made it. It's 5 o'clock in the morning in New York. It's only 2 o'clock in the morning here in Washington. And it's like fucking noon in Australia or something.
Hey, Tammy.
Us human men, we truly are the creator and the destroyer. Oh, we're pretty good about both, yeah. We are pretty good about both. Like, it's what we do. And we recognize that we do those things, which is kind of fucked compared to other things. Like, the rabbits, when they took over Australia, they didn't realize they were destroying everything. They just did it. But yeah, we look at it, we're like, yeah, we're fucking this all into the ground. Check this out. I'm going to fuck it a little harder. Sorry, you were in bed.
Yeah, it's funny. Early on, we introduced all these species that devastated the biosphere. And these days, it's like a war tactic. You can send over a pest to a certain country to hurt their economy and all this stuff. China's doing that with a lot of places, sending all these insects and pathogens and viruses everywhere.
Yeah, that's a... Yeah, it's not, well, it's an easy way to fight without without doing too terribly much.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't get caught. That's, you know, ever since the end of World War II, I guess Vietnam was really the war that showed it. But it's like, if you want to fight, if you want to fight a country like the United States or the Soviet Union or something like that, you don't square off with army versus army. That's stupid. That's old school.
Yeah.
You fucking attrition those bitches. Make them bleed.
Fifth generation of warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a theory. I buy a lot of stuff off Temu. And anytime you buy a phone charging cable or anything like that, they always have this blue light in it. So you've got it next to your bed charging your phone at night. You've got this blue light there. And everyone knows that blue light affects sleep patterns. And so the little act of putting a blue light in someone's phone charger could be costing, across the whole population that owns those chargers, it could be costing thousands of man hours a day. And it's just by this one little act.
That's, yeah, those kinds of little things. That's, I mean, the Americans and the Soviets, we spent billions on figuring that stuff out. We had no clue at the beginning, but the MK Ultra is a thing that people always talk about at that point, but it was a lot more subtle than flat out attempts at mind control. There was all kinds of just subtle manipulation. And even now, like I'm firmly of the belief, that the war on drugs was exemplified in order to drive the culture shift for it. That's probably the biggest conspiracy theory that I've got. But if you're into psychology at all, and if you're into history at all, you know that there ain't no fucking way by Nixon's time that his aides were not screaming at him, look at tobacco. If you go out there and say, don't do this, while the cool kids on TV are doing it, guess what these fuckers are going to do? They're going to, you're telling them there's a psychological thing that basically at about just a few years before that, Mao Zedong had fucking consolidated power in China using very similar tactics of driving the youth against the power establishment. And instead of using it to consolidate the dude's power here, it was used to splinter the society. So instead of having an America that was doing this, we had an America that was doing it's still that way today. You fucking have, we have a two-party system and a 1,000-party fucking population over here.
Yeah. And then it's also a factor of sovereignty over your own consciousness and mind. The banning of psychedelics and all that. All the benefits that they're finding of these alternative psychedelic remedies. I mean, even MDMA for PTSD and end-of-life therapy and mushrooms for similar things, I think. There's another one as well.
Yeah, that's there's reports. Now, this stuff I don't want to hang my hat on because this is stuff that I haven't researched a bunch in the last 10, 20 years. But there were reports of the MK Ultra stuff of them testing LSD on American and Vietnamese POWs and them refusing to fight each other and shit like that. And I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And they say that, I mean, and this part, I can pretty much hang my hat on. The MK Ultra made it where if you worked for the CIA from the late 50s up to the mid 70s, getting dosed with acid was part of, it's a professional hazard. It just might happen. Just might happen. Your buddy might walk by, your boss might have somebody in another camp in your community might walk by and put something in your coffee. And
yeah, simple as that too.
It is as simple as that. And they were trying all kinds of shit on people's brains. And, we live in a world now where you can I'm old school. Back in my day, we did drugs that we knew what they were going to do to you. This fentanyl, dude, I see people on that shit that it's like, dude, how many, your brain's gone, bro. Like you're fucking gone. Yeah. I saw people on meth do that back in the day. They would lose themselves into but that was the first one that I saw. And meth was new back in the, at least not new, but it was new and big in the 90s. Yeah. It wasn't popular in the 80s. I'm in every rabbit hole, says Jenny.
Yeah, Paul Stamets is really good. I actually pre-ordered the hard copy of his new book. I think it's an encyclopedia of psilocybin mushrooms or something all over the world.
And we have a quite a few of them up in this part of the country. If you go to the coast, you got to get, I live in the desert side, but you cross the mountains and go over to where it's wet all year long. And yeah, you fucking all over the goddamn place. Used to be.
The native Australian one has some of the highest psilocybin concentration in the world.
Oh, really? Well, I have to go check it out one of these days. I'm getting too old for that shit, but as I drink more. Kind of getting old. Well, they say it's a state of your mind and that your body, that's, but yeah, those people that say that tend to be fucking young. You get old and it's like you're, like a lot of bikers will tell you, like there's two kinds of Harleys. There's the hard tail and the soft tail. The hard tail is just a straight frame. Fucking frame goes back, tire mounts to the frame. Soft tail's got fucking springs, shock absorbers. And any of the guys that are my age that ride will tell you quick, fucking your days of hard tail end when you're in your 30s, man. At some point, you're just like, okay, I'm out. I can't ride these no more. Fucking get off of them. I can't walk for 2 days. Dan be tripping. Well, man, I ain't tripping. Well, not today. I was tripping back in the day, man. Man. Lion's mane in a microdose. Yeah, a lot of people swear by lion's mane. I've got a friend here in town that's a chemist that helps some of these guys. He's helped up the bar on a lot of this kind of stuff, a lot of these extraction methods and stuff. He's like, you don't just soak your shit in alcohol anymore. Come on, that's fucking old school. You hear that, Mark? You're so handsome. Did you read
thanks,
that?
Tammy.
Shocked quartz talk. Yeah, we talked about shocked quartz a little bit, but
I think Trig wants us to get back on topic.
Oh, fine. We'll get back on topic. All right. So what, do you know any of the details about the shocked quartz, the newer definition, I guess, of the softer shocked quartz? Do you know any of those details of that?
Yeah, we went over the main points before. The fractures with silica glass in them, that's like one of the main indicators that they were formed during an impact event or an airburst. Traditional shock quartz, you can really tell, like if you Google it, you can see the hard angles repeating like that. And there's lots of different little shock features like Delphine twins and Brazil twins and that manifest in the crystal structure. But the quartz glass, basically the silica glass, is the main indicator in these.
The main smoking gun. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And obviously when they're found alongside other impact proxies too. I actually did a bit of lab work early on. I got sent a bunch of slides with the shock quartz, and it was my job to go through and identify candidates and map them. And then I'd send the slides back and they'd do the analyses. So I was just doing a bit of grunt work identifying candidates, which they then went and tested with 10 different methods. And so that's another thing, like these shock quartz grains are analyzed with 10 different techniques that are standard in the field, and there's no way that they can be anything else. No one can say that we haven't done the work, because there's been extensive work done. And it's just the difficulty of ramming through a new paradigm. Especially when people like Mark Boslow are discrediting our work at every turn. We get messages from scientists every day saying they support us, but it's only the loudest people who seem to be heard. So
frustrating. Thanks, Tammy. Yes, I love the shirt too. She got me this shirt at the alien convention over on the coast. It's a freaking pretty cool shirt, actually. It's the X-Men comic, except for it's a parody of with Sasquatch Men. It's the original X-Men comic. It's pretty good.
Nice.
But yeah, the thing with the thing with the paradigms like that being hard to push through, you know, we saw it with the KT impact where he really had to, you know, Alvarez really had to fucking prove it. Since then, it hasn't been as difficult in most cases for impacts to get accepted. But in this particular case, because I swear to God, anything where they say, if anytime anybody says 10,500 BC, it's going to get like fucking just this grip of people that are just going to come and oppose it just out of hand. Doesn't even seem to matter what, what is, if it could possibly have anything to do with Atlantis, you're going to have people that get, no.
And there's the other angle too, because of all the work that's been done around 12,800 around the Younger Dryas, anytime some weird theory wants to gain legitimacy, they go, 12,800 years, the dating shows it happened at this time. Like the Bugis spheres, for example, 12,500 was the date on that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they haven't said anything about it, but it's kind of implied, right? Like, you see the date, they're trying to gain some legitimacy there. And I mean, sure, I've thought about it a few times. Like, what if what we see at the Younger Dryas boundary, all these impact proxies, what if they were formed during nuclear detonations, not airbursts? What if we nuked ourselves back into the Stone Age, or someone else nuked us back into the Stone Age? And that's the kind of evidence we see. Because all of these proxies also occur in nuclear detonations, especially the shock quartz. So
that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things with that's kind of funny is they say that, you know, if you look back in time, there's not many things we could go back and prove. You know, if you go back a million years, they had fossil fuels a million years ago, or hypothetically could have had fossil fuels a million years ago. But, you know, if you go back a million years, you wouldn't be able to find any evidence for that whatsoever. But you might find like evidence of nuclear activity. And so then they find like a couple of places, at least one place on the planet where there's evidence of like nuclear fusion happening. And they're like, yeah, well, it probably had, like, it was easier to do fusion back in those days. The atoms were different or something, hadn't deteriorated as much. So like they were, and it's just like, I don't know for sure. That's, it gets outside of my purview. And when you start talking a million years ago and somebody having a nuclear power plant on Earth, that is kind of, does seem pretty out there. At the same time, it's like, dude, you guys can't go saying this is the bar, and then somebody jumps it and you're like, oh no, actually that wasn't the bar. Still can't take you serious. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah. And that's another thing. Aaron Nunn's comment, Mars is evident of nuclear fallout. Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it? The geochemistry and atmospheric chemistry has isotopes that are only made during nuclear detonations that we know of. So how did they get there? Wow. Was Mars nuked into the Stone Age, or nuked out of existence? Did we come here from Mars after getting nuked? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's all kinds. It really does get pretty fun to guess about it and speculate. But it is, without going to Mars and like really digging around, you know, we can't really say a whole lot, sadly. We can guess.
And obviously, you've got the face on Mars. I don't know what to think of that, but the structure nearby, the square structure nearby, that's certainly much more compelling.
It's pretty square, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty square, let's just say that. So it's not unheard of that there might have been a civilization on Mars, and if there was a civilization on Mars, then what's the likelihood that we're the offshoot? What's the likelihood of two different civilizations arising in the same solar system?
Exactly. Did octopi come with us? That's a good question. How do you finally prove for the solid YDH? When do the against step away? That's a good question too. My guess would be, as a person from the outside that dabbles in this shit, my guess would be it would almost take something happening. Like if somebody started studying the Tunguska event and they found that same size type of starts shocked quartz, all of a sudden,
Well,
something like
we
that.
found it. We found it at Tunguska.
Well,
Yeah,
if
we have.
not, then it's, these guys are just being assholes. And
They are.
it's going to take some funerals. That's where we're at now.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. That's really how it's going to happen. All the old guard will die out, like Montanari and Boslow and Morrison and all these fucking cretins who just sit back all day and write emails doing character assassinations and claiming that we're all frauds and all this stuff. So, yeah, that's what it's going to take, all the old guard to die out, unfortunately.
It's sad. I think it's a unfortunate side effect of the internet in the early social media days had kind of, I always refer to them as the atheism wars. Like between like 2006 to like 2015, even maybe 2012, it was really going there for a few years, and it was like I think it seems to me that a side effect of that was a lot of cynicism masquerades as skepticism now. It's just discarding shit, fucking throw out the baby with bathwater, the whole fucking house, fuck you all.
Yeah, well, the whole r/atheism movement, they've gone so far away from religion that they've embraced another religion of scientism. Like,
It's
they've gone
unfortunate.
so secular that they've created their own religion, and now scientists are the priests.
And that's just it. It's a sad state of affairs because what we have is you got the people are basic. They're in cliques and they're fighting in teams now. And it's like we can see behind the curtain and see that it's in groups. You guys are the Comet Research Group is forced into an insular community because the rest of the fucking assholes out there are pushing you guys in there. And it ends up where you either accept this group of scientists' findings, or you accept that group of scientists' findings. And that's, man, like I was saying earlier, that's at that point we're not far away from shit getting really, really, really ugly. Like we saw a taste of it with COVID, where people they re accepted and rejected the science based on what animal was next to the scientist's name more than, did it tickle my confirmation bias and shit. And that's, I mean, that's where we're dangerously in this. We're getting very close to a spot where it's going to be as for sale as it was in the fucking 40s and 50s with the sugar and tobacco industries. It's just going to be a fucking nightmare. Just going to be a nightmare.
Absolutely.
It'll give me a job. I'll get to keep yelling about stuff, but
Yeah,
I'll get hammered at by skeptics. Skeptics. Fucking.
pseudo skeptics.
Yeah. I'll give it another 10 minutes or so, like 2:45, we'll call it good. Does that sound all right to
Yeah,
you?
no worries. Yep,
All right. I'll get a little bit of sleep before I take my munchkin to school or kick him out the door. Digital ID. Oh yeah, we got all that shit going on. We got all that shit going on. Yeah, the scientists being the priest is kind of an unfortunate thing because the idea behind skepticism and stuff is that you trust the scientific method because you understand that humans are fallible. So when you start like latching on to one scientist, that's it's a human, it's a psychological thing. It's not, you're always going to look for somebody to give you the answer. You're always going to look for the fucking the source. The Bible says there's one mediator between God and man, and that's the man Jesus. It's like we're always looking for that mediator. We're always looking for somebody to tell me the truth, tell me the reality, tell me the facts. And that's kind of unfortunate because 9 times out of 10, the people that step into those fucking roles are not interested in actually telling you the facts. They're interested in fucking making a dollar. maybe fucking one of your wives or kids or something too. We've seen is, well, if you don't pay too much attention, there's another fucking exclaimer on this on the screen. Epstein Island is actually, there is no list. I'll show up. Community notes on your YouTube video. We got the YDIH, global warming, and now Epstein. All right.
Yeah, I'm in the community notes program, so I can see notes before they are applied, and I can see the arguments against the notes. And I'm honestly surprised at how often I see community notes on people from our community's posts. Like, you know that the area or the industry is getting popular when that kind of stuff crops up on like a Jimmy post or a Dan post, there's a community note underneath, and it's like, I mean, it must be like the no-lifes like Kevin Patrick and like the Cheshire fucking retard and the Boslows of the world that, well, I know there's a few, that Nick Dimos guy and Nick Beeblebrox on Facebook, just devote their whole lives to worshipping the prevailing paradigm.
Nick Beeblebrox, yeah, he blocked me a while ago. That boy's something else.
Yeah.
You wonder, again, it goes back to that. You got to wonder why, what even motivates these motherfuckers?
Well, exactly. It's being right on the internet, I guess, or a self-righteousness. Like, yeah, I don't get it.
It's just crazy. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's like,
go out and touch grass, you fucking retard. Like,
yeah, something. I mean, fucking, and try to enjoy life a little bit. This is just like, this really, it really bothers you this much that somebody thinks something else about the past, really? I mean, come on, yeah. Fuck on. We're all interested in this. We're all wondering where we came from and what happened, and we've all got opinions, and you're more than, you know, more than welcome to argue about this stuff and whatnot, but there's a point where it crosses from like the discussion into just like pure assholery. I'm saying, my God, dude, fucking athletes don't act like this. Boxers beat the fuck out of each other and walk away, both of them with broken bones, yeah, from what they just did to each other, with better fucking attitudes, yeah, than you guys bring, yeah, to the table. What the fuck?
Yeah. Yep. It's getting worse and worse as the political polarization becomes worse.
Yeah, the political polarization is, yeah, that's, it's nice seeing some of that start to die down in the social area, but it seems like anytime anything political happens that it just crops back up, and then like we see shit like Charlie, and then it's just like, fuck, dude. I was so glad me and Tammy were on a fucking road trip when that happened, because I didn't, like, I was only checking the internet a couple times a day. I was like, fuck, man, I do not want to be looking at Twitter 20 times and just seeing this constant fucking barrage of from everybody. Yeah. So frustrating. Yep. Me versus Dibble, 5 rounds MMA. I don't know. Make sure that he brings clothes that are like appropriately fitting. I don't want him hiding weapons up his sleeves or some such shit.
Yeah, how are you meant to grapple him when he can just wriggle out of his
fucking, he's like the jiu-jitsu retard. He's got a fucking his own weapon. That's been a fucking, I don't know why that's turned into a brain rot meme, but like they're all with jiu-jitsu is the fucking autism thing now. With it, they're all the martial artists are making fun of jiu-jitsu guys and saying that their parents took Tylenol when they were pregnant. I don't understand how that fucking shit takes off. I certainly don't understand how it ends up in my feed, because I don't follow martial artists at all, but it does. Probably because I got a teenage kid. That's probably why. He sends me random shit, so.
That'll do it.
He is a cancer sufferer. Yep. He pulled that out and said that he's, I can't, now I could be like Russell Crowe in South Park. I couldn't find cancer. You see, did you ever see that Russell Crowe on South Park?
Yeah.
He can't find cancer, but he can find a guy with cancer to beat the shit out of him. It's so stupid. They picked on him so hard.
South Park's a legendary show.
Oh man, they zero fucks given, no punches pulled, and the only when Comedy Central made them, and that, like, even then they still did what they could. It's so funny.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shows. I remember I was bored with it, with Beavis and Butthead when South Park came out, and a friend of mine was like, "You got to check this out. You got to check this out." I'm like, "Ugh." And I sit down, and the kids walk up to Chef, and he goes, "How are all my little crackers doing today?" It's like, "Okay, God damn it, I'll watch some of this. That's too fucking funny." That completely caught me unawares. And that was I think the fucking Halloween episode when all the kids get zombified with the Worcestershire sauce.
What was that podcast you were on the other day?
The
With the
Occult
panel of six
Rejects.
people? Yeah, that one. That's the first one I've seen from them, and some pretty deep conversations in that one.
Yeah, it
Like
was good.
that dude who just like, whoa, with his theory went on for like 20 minutes straight, and and then you're like, oh well, I'll start at the start. You're pretty well remembering where he went throughout his whole
Trying
run.
to, yeah.
Yeah, no, that was a pretty cool podcast, actually.
Thanks. Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I was surprised at the end because I didn't realize I was going to be talking to so many people. I was surprised that I was fielding questions like a tennis player there for a bit, but I felt like I was able to keep up and remember. Did slaves build the pyramids, like you said, on Piers Morgan? I didn't say if slaves built the pyramids on Piers Morgan. Go watch that again. I said that if slaves did build the pyramids, that Zahi Hawass's proof that slaves didn't build the pyramids is inaccurate because the evidence that he uses is we found these people here that said they were the workers of Khufu. They wouldn't bury them if they were not slaves. Well, they could have had a million slaves that they would have buried. So that was my point. I didn't say they did use slaves. I said they could have. But that is one thing that is kind of frustrating about this is that's people's the polarization goes well outside of politics, and people a lot of times just hear one side or the other of an answer. And I sit on a fence post. I just sit on that thing all day long. You'd think I was a peg boy. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate y'all watching. I really appreciate everybody coming and hanging out. Did you want to plug anything before we get going, Mark?
Not really, just my Twitter, I guess. Mark the Young, I think. What is it? A Mark Young 90 with underscores in between.
So who did build the god dang pyramids? I don't know, Tammy. I don't know. People that lived in Egypt, I'll give you that much. Technically, they would have been Egyptians. Yeah.
Well, actually, it wasn't called Egypt back then. Egypt's a modern name, so they weren't Egyptians. So, heh.
The Comedians, or they were Anunnakians. Nephilim. Yep, there's an answer. But yeah, I'll make sure and link your Twitter down in the about section of this one. I didn't do that at the beginning. Landicam, yeah, that's it. Landicam is a fun channel to check out. Well, I'm glad you made it, Jenny. I'm glad that you made it, Tammy, Mr. H, Matt. So many of you guys. We'll go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you all for coming. I really appreciate it. And make sure and go check out Mark's Twitter and the Comet Research Group. And we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, Dan, for having me. Good to see you all. Have a good one.
Yep, thanks.